Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back here. I want to remind you on our way to our conversation that support for WEAA is provided by AAA Mid-Atlantic. More information at AAA.com/discounts. And the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank, so it belongs to you. More information at www.mecu.com, or you can click on the banner at steinershow.org and get all the information about banking at MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. There was an article that was printed a few months back, I think, in Boston by a blogger calling Baltimore City's mayor the worst mayor in America. Because she didn't pay attention to traffic, wanted to have the Grand Prix instead, and more. So I read the article, and at first I read the article, and I said, just throw it in the wastebasket. Who cares what this blogger in Boston says? But then I began to have a conversation in Baltimore about this article, kind of moving around. So I said, well, maybe it's worth having a conversation about what it means to be why that would happen to Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, who is, in, let's say, Barack Obama's eye, one of the best mayors in the United States of America, which is why he appointed her as Secretary of the Democratic National Committee. There are many people who don't like what's happening with the Grand Prix. There are many people who have questions about the development in the new development in the Inner Harbor, especially in relation to Perkins Homes, the killings in Baltimore. And some people think she's the bee's knees, as some of my grandmother would say, or some people would look at it and say that she is, in fact, not leading the city in the right way. So what does it mean to be a great mayor? What is this article saying that should make us at least think about what it means to be a great mayor and administration for a city like Baltimore? You can join us with your thoughts at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages or tweet us at Mark Steiner. You can read the article on our Facebook page and read the article on our webpage as well. We are joined in studio by Councilman Brandon Scott, who represents the 2nd District in Baltimore City Council. Good to have you here, Brandon.
Thank you, sir.
Hassan Giordano is with us, host of Reporters Roundtable, publisher of DMVDaily.com. Good to see you again, my friend.
Always a pleasure.
And Krishana Davis is with us, multi-platform journalist, writes for the Afro-American newspaper, specializing in the fields of politics, news, and fashion.
Good to see you again,
Good to
Mark.
410-319-8888. So you all, if you hadn't seen this thing, I know a lot of people had, like to see your response to this. What was your response? What were your thoughts when you first saw this piece about the mayor being the worst mayor in Baltimore? Brandon.
For me, Mark, my response then and my response now is that, first of all, I really don't care what people in Boston have to say about Baltimore. And my response is that, for me, seeing and knowing, being on the inside at City Hall and knowing, being in City Hall since 2007 until now, knowing the changes and the challenges of the government, you know, having $120 million budget deficits, but still being able to not lay off people and still being able to keep those services, where I'm looking at other cities across the country during that same time period where people have been laid off, cities have filed for bankruptcy, people's pensions have been totally cut out. To see that we've been able to, in this great recession, and still have positive things going on in the city, I mean, to me, it's just not true. So when someone from Boston, I could go home today and say the Mark Steiner Show on an anonymous blog and say the Mark Steiner Show is the worst radio show in America, and someone will pick it up and run with it. So, you know, we just have to take things in their context, especially in our society now, when any and everybody who has a gripe can gripe.
Hassan Giordano.
You know, I find it very interesting that my good friend Councilman Scott, who in and of itself raised an issue and was the only councilman, let's be clear, that raised the issue that when we were shuttering fire stations and closing rec centers, that the mayor's budget included $11 million that goes to the state's attorneys plus new office, which the city would be responsible for $500,000 for the first 3 years and then be on the hook for the rest of it for the remaining years. We've seen this. It's perception versus reality. I don't care if it's from Boston. The sad part is it goes all the way to Boston. You might not care what a Boston blogger says, but if somebody in Boston sees our mayor this way, imagine what the people of this city feel. I mean, you just got hit with a cumulative increase of 42% on the water bills. People are getting hit with tax after tax after tax. Yet the mayor gets to drive around in a $100,000 plus salary, drive around in her own trucks that provided by the city with her own driver, doesn't pay for Oriole games or Ravens games or concerts. And you wonder why people are upset. People are just frustrated at this point. They're wondering why you're shutting down services for their children, but at the same time you're giving billions of dollars to Harbor Point and these developers downtown. And whether it's the reality of her being the best or the worst mayor in the city, it's the perception that at home that's what she is.
I don't disagree with Hassan, but I think that you have to also see everything that the mayor inherited when she came in 2010 as well. I mean, the city already had a lot of blight. The homicide and crime rates were already really high in the city. There were already a lot of issues with the education system. So you can't put everything at her feet. I think that she, any good mayor has a short-term and long-term vision or plan. And there are going to be certain policies and procedures that you put in place that people may not agree with initially. So I'm not going to say that I agree with all of her policies or that I agree with, how she's run everything wholeheartedly. But I think that she has put in a lot of policies that a lot of people aren't going to like, but will help Baltimore in the long term. Because if you look at it, Baltimore couldn't keep going in the way that it was going. Somebody had to step up and do something. So I think that if nothing else, I can say that she's a mayor who tried to do things that other people weren't trying.
And I agree with that wholeheartedly, that her policies are needed. The pension reforms, things that are going, because we've seen Detroit. We understand. But it's also a mayor. Sheila Dixon had this problem when she was city council president. How you are as a governing body as opposed to a person that is elected by the people and for the people. She does not, Stephanie, the mayor, Rawlins Blake, does not seem to have that connection with people. It seems like she comes off as it's my way or the highway, and I really don't care what people think.
Well, I disagree, but I think what makes a great mayor is doing, and the same thing, a great mayor, a great elected official, period, is doing what's right. Not only is out. I preach this all the time, doing what's right for your constituency, your city, your state, not only today, not only tomorrow, but for 20 years down the road. And what we've had in the city of Baltimore is people that have come in, from D'Alessandro to Schaefer, whose mess we inherited. The check was bounced when we got there. We had these folks who were writing these checks for pensions, for unions, who were giving people small little buildings no bigger than Mark's studio and calling it a rec center, knowing that it really wasn't, and just appeasing a small group of people, knowing that that's not what's best for them in the long run. And what the mayor does, and what I give her great, it takes courage to do stuff like that. It takes courage to go and say, hey, look, you were guaranteed this pension way back when. We knew then we couldn't afford it. We had this letter from Schaefer saying we can't afford this, but I'm going to change it, because if we don't, Baltimore will be Detroit. And that's what I'm telling, my friends who work for the city. I say, look, you can keep getting your pension or you're getting paid the way you were today and not pay into your pension if you want. But when it's time for us to retire, there will be no pension. But things like that are unpopular. So they're unpopular, but they're what's best for the city. And when we talk about, and just for a second, and we talk, Krishana brought it up, when we talk about perception versus reality, the reality is that the Mayor's Vacants the Values program is a Clinton Global initiative. It's recognized on a national scale for the things that they're doing. But here at home, we seem to have this, and this is a Baltimore thing, it's a song, we seem to have this thing where we don't recognize the great things that we do here. We let other people do it. You know that for yourself.
But does it take courage to give sweetheart deals to developers who violate the transparency laws that governs the deals that are being made?
I won't disagree.
While at the same time taxing the little guy uptown and giving developers downtown tax breaks?
So let me ask this question.
One of those taxes, the bottle tax, of course, as you know, led to us getting $1 billion in school construction and renovation that we would have never seen.
And drove out small businesses out of this city.
They didn't go anywhere. The two most opponents against the bottle tax are in my district. And I go to those businesses all the time. And no one's skipping the soda aisle.
So let me just throw in here a couple of things. In the conversations we had the other day on the show about Detroit.
That was a great show.
Thank you.
I missed it.
That what you all are saying is blaming the workers of the past and blaming the public unions for the crisis we have, instead of putting the blame, I think, where it belongs, which is on the developers and businesses who got all the tax breaks they always wanted from this city.
They're not on the backs of the workers
who built this city.
Well, you're saying that
everybody's father and grandfather in this room should be denied their health benefits
and their retirement
benefits because the city and governments can't live up to the promises they made to the workers that built this community, the same they did to the Bethlehem Steel workers in Dundalk, which is to take away all their retirement, push them out with nothing. So is that the America we're talking about?
No.
We're justifying that?
That's not what we're saying. That's not what we're saying. I think we all agree that those old-time developers and business owners are just to blame. It's the old-time politicians.
You think they're different than the ones we have now?
Some of them are.
One and the same.
Some of them are. But what we're saying is for our generation, it pains me to have to actually happen. Hassan was there last year when we were talking about the teacher pension shift and all of that. They were literally my teachers that I was sitting there telling that we can't afford to do your medical benefits the way we used to. And it pained me to do that. But I know that in the long run, For my unborn kids and for Malik, Hassan's son, that we had to do that decision. We had to make those decisions in order for us to even be a city, for us prevent us from becoming Detroit. It's a hard thing, Mark. It's a very hard thing. My granddad worked at GM, and his pension has been stripped down. So I understand. I totally understand.
Let me push back a little bit. Let me let Krishana jump in and say.
And I would say, I mean, you have to look at the context, too. I mean, look at earlier this year, we had the firm from Philly saying that Baltimore was among five other cities that was looking at possibly going into bankruptcy. So the idea that something had to be done is true. But at the same time, you can't act as if the issues and the debts that we have currently aren't coming from something that happened years and years down the pipeline. But it doesn't also you also have to look at the fact of what's going on now. I mean, look at the Harbor Point deal that's currently on the table, Perkins Homes, and a lot of the issues that the residents have. So I think you have to look at what's going on now with developers getting tax breaks and developers not including residents of the city, and it kind of being this downtown versus, you know, community issue. But at the same time, you also have to realize that you can't keep doing things the way you've been doing them and expect that the same, you're going to get a better result. That's insanity.
But then again, I'm going to go to the phones here, but I'm going to posit something, and it gets in some ways directed to all of us, but Councilman Scott directed you and some other political leaders, and not an attack, which is directing this question.
Yes, sir.
Which is that whenever we have this crises that we're facing in America, in our cities, in Detroit, Chicago, where they're closing schools right and left and laying off thousands of teachers, only to bring in Teach for America kind of teachers who are paid a lot less money. Because they're not experienced teachers and younger.
They're not experienced.
All that going on. Where's the political response? Where's the response that says that if President Barack Obama and President George Bush and the rest can bail out banks at over $800 billion, cannot invest in cities so that Detroit, which is much less money, is Detroit not worth saving?
Because
is
we have Baltimore a capitalist-driven society, though.
So my question, I agree with that, Krishan. You can come back with that. But what I'm saying is, why aren't our political leaders fighting politically to say, we're not going to take away our teachers' pensions, and we're going to fight this politically because America has to be a different kind of place? Where's that battle among our political leaders?
No, I think you bring up a great point, and I know that personally I took up one myself recently with the rain tax or the stormwater fee, you know, because I felt that my district was proportionally affected because I have such a large industrial portion. And I simply said that, look, if the feds want us to do this with stormwater, if the state wants us to do this with stormwater, then they should give us the money. And the same thing goes for infrastructure. The same thing goes for everything else that they mandate that we do without any input or without any dollars.
But y'all passed that rain tax. But like other counties said, you know what, if we're going to pass it, we're going to pass it with 1 cent, or we're not going to pass it at all.
States like
Virginia have challenged the federal government.
Right.
That's what we don't see. It's like you have a Brandon Scott who is the vice chair, mind you. Not the chair, but the vice chair who stands up more on public safety when issues like these homicide increases happen. But where's the other political leadership? People can name on one hand how many of the council people and the elected representatives here stand up for the people. Brandon Scott, Carl Stokes, Mary Pat Clark. Where's the rest of them?
What were you going to say, Krishana?
And I would just have to say I kind of agree with that mindset. Someone has to stand up. And the point of an elected official is to be the voice for their constituents, for the residents. And if you aren't going to keep their best interests at heart, and if everything is going to be development, and I can definitely understand like a long-term view and how that will help a city. But at the same time, you also have to think about the people that's there here and now. And those people are what's going to matter. And those people have that perception. One of the craziest things to me was during the Ravens Super Bowl parade, when all you could see on CNN was the blight and the vacant homes behind, you know, Ray Rice and behind Ray Lewis as they're coming through Baltimore. And I thought that was one of the craziest things I've ever seen, a Super Bowl champion home, and the streets and the homes and the infrastructures looks like it hasn't been updated in almost 100 years. That's insanity.
It's been at least 40 years.
And Mark, I just want to...
And then we have to get the phone.
Yes, sir, I just want to point out one thing. And we talk about, I know that this is something that I've been preaching and that I heard when I was running my campaign, is that developers only care about downtown, and no one building anything outside of downtown is ever going to get a tax break. Well, actually, we actually have right now in my district, along Bel Air Road in Councilman Mosby's district and some area, Councilman Middleton, where there are special incentive, tax incentive for those who want to come develop in a specific potential neighborhood area and to do apartment, retail, market rate apartment houses. That's something that's...
When are we going to give the citizens tax breaks? We keep giving developers who got all this money breaks. They don't really need.
I hear you, Hassan.
We're not giving the little guy any tax breaks.
I hear what you're saying, but you can't tell one of my constituents who worked with us on this Bel Air Road technical assistance panel. They want it. This was something that my citizens suggested, and we were able to get it through the mayor's office and through legislation.
Let me open the phones here. 410-319-8888. And Casey, you're on the air.
Hey, how's everybody doing today?
Good, Casey. I knew it was Casey.
All right.
Casey, you pulled to call me back yesterday.
Now, hey, Hassan, I meant to call you back. But let me tell you this. Now, Brandon, I love you, and I appreciate your passion. I have not been that person that's toted the mayor's flag anytime during her election. Let me be specific. I attended the last Board of Estimates meeting 2 weeks ago. It was the most atrocious thing I'd ever attended in my life. The mayor sat on that board, and it looked like a high school council because she wouldn't extend the olive leaf across the aisle to our council president and our comptroller when they were trying to do the work of the people. She doesn't listen to her constituents. Now, I need to be specific on this. Now, here's one specific thing. I specifically told the mayor that, listen, we have a problem on the Greenmount Corridor with crime. Her response, I said, we don't need more police officers. We need more effective policing. We need more proactive policing. Now, here we are 3 years later, and we're sitting in a crime wave in this city. Specifically, when we had those two bodies that fell on Greenmount Avenue 2 years ago, I specifically pointed out that this was what was going to happen. But what did the mayor say specifically about Casey Jenkins? Oh, he was an Otis Rowley supporter. No, it's not that I'm an Otis Rowley supporter. I got two dead bodies in the street, and it's affecting my business. She has her own agenda, and it has nothing to do with the main streets. It has nothing to do with small business. I mean, take a look. Just take a look at her microloan program. I mean, you have businesses that are struggling out there that can get $35,000 from the microloan program, but getting still, you want them to pledge a $140,000 house, or they're not going to do it. That doesn't make sense, especially for a sustainable business that's been there for 7 years. Some of her plans are counterproductive toward the growth of the main streets. But if you specifically go back and look at some of her YouTube ads, she touted that she was a main street mayor. It's not that we're looking at, you know, some of the bad things that she's done, because everybody makes mistakes. But she's not listening to the constituents.
Krishana, reporter, what's your view on what Casey just said?
I mean, so he's talking about the crime. So I'll give you the numbers for the crime for the past couple of years in Baltimore. 2010, the murder rate was 200.
I wonder how you got those.
Leave me alone, Brandon. So 2010, the murder rate was 223. 2011, 119. 2012, 217. And currently we're about 130-ish, give or take, right now for homicides in the city. So I guess you can definitely say, I mean, Baltimore, so just even reading this article, so it mentions, you know, ineffectual transit system. It mentions drugs and crime. But those are all issues that have been issues in Baltimore for more than 10 years. So I'm not going to say that the mayor doesn't need to change how she's pushing crime and in the city, because I think visibility is one thing. So having, you know, more armed police officers on the street, yes, maybe it will have visibility, but it's not going to curtail crime at all. It's not going to keep people from, if they have a vendetta. I mean, look what happened with the triple homicide over on Elmore. The police officer said they had just left the area not even 10 minutes before that crime happened. So just having that presence is not going to make a difference. The Fox Trotter was out when that happened. That didn't make a difference. So I think that there has to be a change in how there's no relationship to me between the city hall and city council and a lot of the mayor's office. I think with a lot of the residents, I think they feel that there is no relationship there overwhelmingly. And I think that has been one of the biggest issues, and it's going to continue to cause that perception versus reality issue as you go forward. So even if the mayor is taking actions and making steps towards helping the city, if the residents don't feel like they have a connection with her, it's never going to matter.
And Mark, just to chime in on that, you know, this is something that we're preaching. I'm preaching during our 300-man thing. Of course, and everyone knows this, I'm going to always make sure that the police are doing what they're doing. And that's my duty as an elected official. But also as a city resident and as a man and as a young black man in the city, I have to continuously say that until we all realize that it's not just City Hall and Fayette Street, we're going to have these problems. There has to be a total. It's a big piece of the pie, and everybody has it. And Krishana,
hold on a second.
And Krishana mentioned something. One of those numbers, of course, 197, is the lowest amount of homicides that this city has seen in my lifetime.
And that was only because of the Dixon administration that
Stop.
Put in the crime plan.
Stop.
Let's be real.
Stop.
She didn't change that in
Stop.
1 year.
Stop.
We had that in 2011
Stop.
Because you
Stop.
Know this. Because Bill Fell came in
there
with
go.
The deputy Barksdale. They made the plan. You know we've had a conversation about it. It had nothing to do with her strategy.
It did.
That
it
was
did.
Dixon's strategy that was
Stop.
Held over.
Stop, Hassan.
You don't change
it was
crime
my Stop.
In one year.
Stop. Let me just jump in.
The plan was changed.
Wait,
and the plan was changed because
But
Barbara,
now they hire a commissioner and then outsource the crime plan to Boston.
So hold
Come on,
wait
man.
A second, wait, a second,
real.
Wait a second. Wait a second.
Let's stop.
One of the things that we've had a debate about in the show has to do with the police policy when it comes to this. And that Bielefeld's policy was
Bielefeld didn't have a policy, it was Tony Barksdale's.
Bielefeld and Barksdale had a policy that you target the bad guys with guns and not low-level crime and not people just using drugs.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That was what kind of drove the crime rate down.
Yes, sir.
From the Dixon administration.
The murder rate in the city. Mm-hmm. But the interesting stat we don't talk about in terms of murder rates in this town, and then we'll take a break and come right to Lou, our next caller up, is that the areas where the murders are the fewest – or where? I'm not talking about the rich white neighborhoods either, or the middle class black neighborhoods either. But the neighborhoods where they are the fewest, or where safe streets.
Oh abundant. Yeah, we talked about that. Yep, that's a very.
So when you hire ex felons,
and that program has been expanded too.
But yeah. I'm not talking about the piddling expansion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying you have to. Why is the city council not really debating where the budget money should go? Does it go more money, another $100 million to the police? Or do you want to invest another $15 or $20 million in safe streets where you train people coming out of prison to work in our communities, to act as kind of community social workers, crime intervention, helping people in neighborhoods, fight for what they need? Does that bring down crime and opening rec centers to let them work out of, rather than the police? I mean, are we thinking creatively about what cuts
down
crime?
And that's the point that I was holding about trying to find programs that aren't just the police department and having that community involvement. Because if you don't have the mayor's office and the city and city hall and working along with the community to curb the issues, you're always going to continue to have an issue because it's always going to be a disconnect.
Right.
And the highest line item in the budget is always overtime for the police. They are the highest funded department in city government, yet we still have a crime problem. So, Mark, that shows you something's not working. And most people won't think that this mayor will think outside of the box and be able to attack it from a different perspective.
We have to take a break. 410-319-8888. We're going to go back to your call, Lou. Then I'm going to raise some other issues about where city could invest money in terms of business and why we don't. And if maybe I'm off base, we'll find out. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Reminding you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's National Foreclosure Settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. We're here with Koshana Davis, a reporter, journalist for the Afro-American Newspapers, who specializes in the fields of news, politics, and fashion. Hassan Giordano, publisher of DMVDaily.com, host of Reporters Roundtable, Councilman Brandon Scott, who represents the 2nd District in the Baltimore City Council, and the youngest member of the City Council, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, just wanted to point that out.
But he is getting kind of old.
Watch it now.
410-319-8888 is the number here to join the conversation. Let's go right to the phones. And Lou, you're on the air.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Baltimore has two dimensions, and let me give you an example. I've done some advocacy work in Baltimore. I'm a black male. For instance, one of the dimensions in Baltimore is I can have friends come from out of town, take them out on the boat, and then have dinner at the Charleston and walk around in Baltimore and say, look at the great development. And people that, who come in from out of town think Baltimore is great and they love the mayor. Now, on the other hand, I could go over to Johns Hopkins or any one of the construction sites, and I can see a $1 billion hospital, and I could see 100 people working on the construction site, and not one black man. Mm-hmm. I can go to any construction site in Baltimore and see that nobody's enforcing any of the minority participation. No one's doing anything to develop black business. Now, so on one hand, you think we've got the best mayor in the country, and on the other hand, you're thinking, you know, this woman has completely abandoned the black family and the lower income communities. Now, in defense of the mayor, which I really don't like to do, black folks in Baltimore, especially low-income black folks, do not participate in the political process. So if Stephanie Rawlings Blake decided she was going to fight Annapolis, she wouldn't have anyone standing behind her. So I'll listen off there. Thank you.
You know what? That's an interesting point he raises, because a black mayor, she issues an executive order to make sure police don't target illegal immigrants. Yet we just saw the police chopper see the police beating a black man that was supposed to be an auto theft this week. Yet the mayor has yet to stand behind her own black people and say, no, you have to, it's a hands-off policy of my own young black brothers and sisters. That's the disconnect that people see. And I think, you know, Mark, and I'll close it with this. The article in reference to what we're talking about from Boston Streets basically lays it out. And their premise is that a mayor's job, generally speaking, is to be an advocate for their city and to promote its economic well-being of all. One of the most important ways to achieve this would be, obviously, to attract and retain residents by creating a high quality of life. Yet some other mayors are stuck in the past, convinced apparently that their cities are a one gimmick or convention center away from prosperity. The only thing I would ask is the listeners and the citizens to ask themselves or to call in and say whether they believe that we're on the right track here in the city of Baltimore or not.
But I wonder, Hassan, you brought up the issue of race, and how many politicians that you know at the mayoral level, governor's level, or even the president, we have a black president, really talk about black issues or black politics at all? I mean, so it begs me to wonder, you know, if I don't know if the system is set up for them not to really be able to give that voice to the voiceless when it comes to black issues, or if they're just choosing not to do so. But I think that I think that there aren't many black politicians at that leadership level who are talking about black issues across the board. But overwhelmingly, I think also, too, when you're talking about what a mayor is, a mayor is definitely a leader. They stand up for their residents, and they also have a vested interest in the city. So they're going to have their short term and their long term goals. And you can't do long-term goals without also thinking about the current impact of it right now as well. So you have to also understand how the residents feel about it.
Let you all know we have 4 minutes left in the segment before we have to go to our next segment. So, Brandon, I just...
Oh, just very quickly, and just to talk about some of the stuff that the gentleman has talked about, you know, we know he had the executive order for hiring city residents. So that resulted in like 2,100 people getting hired. The majority of them were city residents. This summer with YouthWorks, there's 5,200 kids working, which is up. And actually, they have this Hire One Youth program, which is for businesses. That's a 50% increase in that, which is over 300 businesses private business, not cutting grass in youth works like I did when we were there. Private businesses supporting our young people. That's thinking outside the box. That's investing in our future, because we know what happens when young people aren't working. And, of course, we're going to continue to work to try to make it 6,000 young people next year. And
that's
7,
great talking points they just emailed you.
No.
But let's talk about real
on,
issues.
Man. That's real. That's real. Off the top, that's real. So, you and I both know when you first started, it was, what, 2,000, 3,000 people in it? So, if that. And they didn't have the experiences that we had.
That was down from 15,000 almost.
Yeah, a long time ago.
So one of the things I think we come back when we have discussion again next week and have some of you all back to kind of talk about this, we should start off with when you have $300 million for the police, $10.7 million for recreation, is there time for the city council and the mayor to kind of wrestle with how we spend the city's money and where that money's put? And what does it mean to invest in business? We had a show in here. I'll just leave you this. We had a show in here the other day. About the fishery being developed in the Inner Harbor at the science with the old science center, and it's an industry that could explode in terms of investment and jobs. Private business is looking at it.
Right.
Only other cities, China and Israel, are looking at it. Baltimore won't look at it. So, do we invest in the Grand Prix? Or should the city be investing in kind of things that may start a new national trend in business that actually puts people to work and creates education? Or there's a guy in this town who creates living roofs, which changes the nature of a city and living conditions in the city, also creates jobs. But nobody in the city will talk to him. Where does he have to go? China.
And nobody in the country will talk to him
to pay attention to his work. So the question is, I think, and where we invest the money, like in safe streets versus other things. It is versus, really, because you don't have so much money. So the question I think we should begin, if you have, well, some of you will come back again in the next week for an hour-long discussion, maybe with one or two others.
You guys can have to start paying the three of us as much as we come on here.
Hey.
I'm joking.
It's good to have you on here to come wrestle with these things. I think we have to. And I think I want to thank the three of you for being willing to come and have this really intense conversation. It's always good to have three of you with us. Councilman Brandon Scott.
Thank you, sir.
Good to have you here, brother. Krishana Davis. Always good to see you in the
studio. One day we'll have to talk fashion on here. One day.
Hassan and I all won't right. be here for that.
Okay.
No.
I don't think so.
It's not Hassan's topic. We know that. Hassan Giordano. Good to see you.
What
here,
you mean
sir.
You know that? Christmas. Always a pleasure, Mark.
Good to see you all that in the hilarious. Studio. We have a continuing conversation here on the Mark Steiner Show. We will have for the next month or more about the Trayvon Martin and what this means for America. We're now going to hear a conversation I did the other day, a very interesting perspective in terms of how the jury was instructed. Stay with us. We'll be right back.